Welcome. This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. And today we're having a free teaser class on the topic of finishing sooner rather than later. Finishing sooner rather than later. This is something that we all want to do. We've got all kinds of wonderful ideas for things that we could do that we would like to get finished. We would like to have finished them last week or last year. And so how do we get them done sooner rather than later? As we'll be discussing, this is not a trivial problem, although there is a basic answer to it, which I think I can give you, which I think can help you all finish sooner than later after you hear this call. I just want to, as we start out, just to be fair to you and me, I want to make it clear this is a teaser call for two public offerings that I have coming up. Just-in-Time Planning, which is a workshop being held by Zoom over the weekend of December 30th and 31st, and the New Year's Launch, which is an 8-week program to achieve a major goal, which starts January 1st. And actually, people who are in launch just get Just-in-Time Planning as a bonus. I'll tell you more about that later on, but just so you know, that's why I'm giving this to you for free. So let's talk about this. I think this is an objective issue. Figuring out how to finish sooner rather than later, I think it's important to your happiness. And I'm really talking about this with respect to major goals, you know, not like efficiency in doing the dishes or efficiency in clearing email, but major goals, things that are going to take a month or more that really you want to try to make sure they get done, because this is the kind of goal that can really expand out and last longer and longer and never seem to get finished. So I have some examples, some of which were sent in to me or are aspects of things that were sent in to me. So like clean out, cull, and reorganize the house. I think of my mother. My mother went through our entire, the house I grew up in, with which had an attic, a cellar, a shed, a garage, and a 40-foot by 80-foot barn. And when she started clearing it out, they were all full, and she cleared out the entire thing. She saved that. We didn't have to do that. That is a problem of finishing sooner rather than later. Another one that came up, how to learn how to schedule time effectively. How long is that going to take, right? I mean, you can't just take a course and do this. When are you going to actually get so that you are effective at scheduling time? It's not obvious. It's probably not a month. One came up that we've got a couple of volunteers who are going to talk with me about their issues. Get clear on whether my brother and I can or will develop a good working relationship at the family business. Right now, that's a very complicated idea, and it involves another person, and it's not clear how long it's going to take to get it. Choose a long-range central purpose. This is something people often come to the Thinking Lab for or to the launch, because it's not exactly how to do that. If you don't already have a central purpose, how do you figure out what your long-range goal is going to be? Figure out a realistic financial plan for the next 30 years. And this, of course, depends on your age. If you're 30, it's really different from if you're 60. And then there's, you know, something generic, like plan an event. On the last launch or two launches ago, we had someone plan a vacation. If you're planning a celebration, it takes, you know, something like on the scale of a wedding, you can buy books that will tell you exactly what to do. But if it's something that you're making up that's never been done before, it's got a lot of moving parts. So what I mean by a major goal is something that is going to take like at least a month of regular effort. And it's got a lot of uncertainty in it. There are a lot of ways that it could bog down. And I think it's important to realize that one of the reasons there's no like simple way to solve this is that every one of the goals that I mentioned is going to be very unique and individual. It's going to be based on the individual's values. And so here I'm also not talking about corporate goals. Corporate goals can be major goals, but if you are working in a corporation, you need to have a personal goal that then ties into the corporate goals that is in fact something that you are wanting to get done. And the key to getting your head around these and figuring out how to move forward and actually get them done sooner rather than later is kind of a technical term, objectivity. Objectivity, this, you know, I get this from Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism, but it really is helpful. The idea of objectivity is that in order to understand certain kinds of things, you need to understand both the facts out there in reality and the nature of the mind that needs to deal with those facts. So, for example, there are things you need to think about in these. Like there are literal facts that you need to know about, like how much time do you have each week? If you're going to try to clean out the house, how much time do you have each week to work on that? And that depends on a lot of other facts, right? Or like if you are trying to figure out your long-range financial plan and you're 60 years old, a fact is how much, what is your health like? Right? This is a critical thing. What is your health? How much stamina do you have? You may have ideas of things that you want to do, but what are you going to be able to do? It depends on actual facts about you, your body, your health. But it also depends, if we're just thinking about looking at how do we think about this problem, you need to be able to think about it. So you also need to know the mind. You need to have crow space, meaning you need to be able to actually hold the problem in mind at one time and not get overloaded so you can actually think step by step. And so, like, for example, if you just have the idea, when my mother went to clear out the family home that I grew up in, you know, she broke it into parts. First, she tackled the barn. Then she tackled the attic. You know, she broke it into parts because she needed to be able to think about one part at a time. And even then she needed to break it into parts. So like in the attic, she did, I'm thinking in the barn, she actually made all the kids take everything they wanted out of the barn. So there was less stuff. And that was just one pass and that reduced the overload. And that let her then think about what was left. But you need to take, you cannot think about some of these complex issues. You cannot think about all at once. You have to find ways to break them into smaller problems that you can think about. And that is objective. That is not you not, you know, being smart enough or something like that. That is because you've got a very complex task. There are also motivation things that you need to be objective about. For example, the factual part is you need to actually know like the means to the ends. Have you figured out the steps will actually achieve the goal? If you haven't actually figured out, well, this will lead to this, will lead to this, will lead to this, then you're not going to be motivated because a big part of motivation comes from seeing that causality. You get excited because you see, oh, if I do this, this, and this, I'm going to get that. And that is entirely about the facts. Do you actually know the causal rules? And so, for example, like learn to schedule time effectively. This is a great example where do you actually know the causal reasons why you aren't doing that? I'm actually working on a problem like this for my initiative for the launch. Everyone in launch has an initiative that they work on during the 8 weeks. One major goal that they want to really move forward during that time. And mine actually involves right-sizing my commitments, which, although I know an awful lot about planning and organizing my time and working effectively, as soon as I figure out how to do something more effectively, I then add another commitment. And that's definitely a problem. So I'm really working to solve that problem now. And I'll tell you, if you don't already know the answer to this, it's really not clear why you're having trouble. There's usually something in the background, and that's one of the issues. You actually need to understand the causality of it in order to be able to solve the problem. Or like the example I brought up of getting clear on whether the brother and person can work together. You know, what are the exact causal factors in there? There's knowledge about what is in fact getting in the way that needs to be sorted out. And that is not that's not subjective. That's something where it's a subtle issue that there isn't some standard explanation for why it's difficult. And you need to figure out why it's difficult in this particular case. And then, of course, the other part of motivation about making the motivation objective is it needs to be a selfish value, right? You need to know why doing this is a big value to you. That's true for these same two things. Like, why do you want to learn to schedule your time effectively? Well, I know why I want to do it. I want to do it because I actually think that's what's holding me back from growing the business. I'm just, you know, not quite as predictable as I need to be able to delegate more stuff. And so it's really clear to me, this is tied to my growing my business. It's not just, oh, it would be nice if I could schedule my time more effectively. But a lot of times people go in and they say, oh, I just should do this. This just would be a good thing. And they don't really see how it would pay off for them. And that's a problem. If you don't actually see the selfish payoff, the goal won't motivate you. Or for like the brother and brothers working together to develop a good working relationship. Why is that important? Why is it important to be able to work together on the family business? Why do they need to work together as opposed to not work together? You know, that you need to know the selfish reason for that to be able to untangle this and figure out what are steps forward. You need to be objective about the motivation. And then finally, there's the action part of it where there are going to be steps that you need to take. And you need to have actual doable steps you can take. If, like, for example, if the first step is something like let's take it for choose a long-range central purpose. You know, suppose you say, oh, well, that's no problem. The first step is pick a direction. Well, do you, and you say, I don't know what that is. That's not a doable step. It might work for another person. I mean, like for me, I could have chosen teaching as a direction and then gone from there. But if you can't answer that question, it's not a doable step for you, right? It's your mind. You have a certain knowledge, you have certain skills, you have certain motivation, and it's your mind that needs to be able to take, you know, manage that step. And it's not, no shame if that, if someone says, oh, the first step is such and such, and you can't do such and such. There's no shame in that. That just means that that step might have worked for that person. You read these how-to books. These people say, oh, here are the six steps to growing your business to, you know, $2 million a year. Well, I've read a lot of those books. Okay. And I will tell you that most of those books talk about growing a business in which the business was teaching people how to make money. It is a lot easier to grow a small business that teaches other people how to make money than to grow a small business that teaches people how to think better. Because people know that they want to make money. And it just, it, you know, it didn't even address some of the questions that I needed to address for my business. So it's the step needs to actually be doable given your resources. And then finally, it needs to be a doable, it needs to be, right, it needs to be a doable means to an end. And here the part that is also sometimes subjective is people get an idea of how to achieve the goal and they kind of get stuck on that. It's like, that's the only way to do it. And that creates a lot of other problems too, because it basically locks you in without the flexibility you need to figure out a way that in fact meets all these other needs. So I'd actually like to talk to Susan and Ryan, who very kindly offered to discuss their examples here, and talk about their goals. And we're going to talk about how you do need to sort of shuttle between the abstract and concrete to get clear on an objective idea about what the goal could be that you could actually get your head around, take steps toward, and finish sooner rather than later. So would one of you like to unmute? I know Susan is here. I don't know if Ryan is here yet.
I'm unmuted.
Okay, great, Susan, thanks. You want to tell people what you wrote me, which was not exactly any of the examples I gave, or you could just tell it in your own words.
Well, let me get it straight here.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't even find it now.
Oh, you want me to read it to you? I'll read what you sent. Is that okay?
Sure.
Clean out, call, and reorganize several areas of the house while learning how to schedule and use my time effectively. So I basically broke this out into two different things.
Right.
Examples. So why do you think I did that, Susan? Susan is in launch. So
well,
she,
I suspect that it's a twofer.
Right.
But I can't think of any other way to practice using time effectively if I don't have a concrete goal to work on.
Right. Okay, great. This was exactly what I was going to ask you. So did you notice that Susan's goal, as she said it to me originally, is kind of a twofer? Clean out, call, and reorganize several areas of the house. Okay, we get what that goal is. While learning how to schedule my time use more effectively. Okay, that's its own complete goal. And what I think I'm hearing here, Susan, is that the real goal is the time management. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's more fundamental.
That's the thing that you really want to see the payoff on?
Yes, although I want to see the payoff on both.
You want it? Yes. So this is very important. It's all right to have multiple values and multiple goals. It's just that if you have a major goal that you're going to put effort into, you need to know what's most important because that's what's going to give you the flexibility. So for example, if you if the real issue was to get the house organized. Like, let's stipulate you were going to have a wedding at your house in 6 months, and you wanted to get, like a bunch of the rooms completely gone through before that wedding. I'm just making this up. That would be a reason why getting the house organized would be the top priority. And if that were the case, you wouldn't be so worried if you didn't learn so much about time management as you went. You'd be more focused on, okay, well, what do I really need to do in order to get this done? And like, for example, you might hire someone to come in and help you. And that would get the job done, but it wouldn't help you learn time management to do it yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. So you need to know what the most important one is so that you can figure out, so basically so you can get creativity about how to finish sooner rather than later. So if your real thing is time management, what we need to know is, I mean, that sounds good. Like that's a skill. Everybody says that's a skill. What is the selfish reason why you want to develop that, Susan? And time management is a generic thing. What you really want is you want to schedule and use your time effectively, right? Why do you want that?
Because there are a number of things that I would like to do with whatever time I have. And I really can't, I don't like that I waste a lot of it.
Okay. So
it's a habit I want to change.
Okay. So there's a negative, which is you feel like you're wasting time. And that makes you kick yourself because there were all these good things you would have done. And let me ask you about these good things you would have done. Is there one of them in particular that you're kicking yourself about? Like, is that what the house or cleaning out is?
I don't know that I could say there's just one. That's certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff in the thinking lab that I keep saying I'm going to go listen to.
Right.
And same thing.
Right. So part of the point, so what I'm basically doing with Susan here, and I'm basically modeling here, is the kind of coaching that we do in the launch program to try to sort out what someone's initiative should be. What is the one thing they're going after? And it may accomplish other things, but you need to know what the top priority is. And one of the things that's very important, this is in my rational goal setting class in the thinking lab, is to make sure that the real goal is framed in positive terms rather than negative terms. And so far, the clearest version of Susan's goal, the clearest motivation for it is to not waste time, which is negative. Now, that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with Susan, that that's the way it's occurring to her. But it does mean that there are more steps that need to be taken to really figure out what is going to pull her forward as opposed to just be, oh, well, I want to avoid that negative. What is the positive that's really going to pull her forward? So let me ask you a question, Susan. Does opening up time in your schedule to be able to clear out the house like really excite you?
I'm not sure of the question. I don't know what you mean by opening up time. I
Well,
have the
well, except that a lot of it gets wasted, right? As it stands right now, a lot of it gets wasted.
Right.
So if it does the idea of turning that wasted time into clearing out the house, does that excite you?
Yeah, it actually does.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about that. Why does that excite you?
Well, this has been on my list of things to do for, I don't know, quite a while.
Okay.
We bought some furniture. We remodeled a couple of areas, and stuff gets disorganized. And I guess I'm a really organized person. That bugs me, and I want to set it right.
So this is a real quality of life issue that's been kind of put on the side for a long time.
Yes.
And so you see what we're moving toward here is it may still be the same goal, right? To clean out, cull, and reorganize several areas of the house. But it sounds like it's make, you know, repurpose the wasted time so that I clear out the house. You see what I'm saying?
That makes the time management the higher goal.
Which it is, right? Because
yeah.
from what you said before, that is the primary thing. What you really want to do is you want to learn how to repurpose the wasted time. And then this is just what you're going to do it with it. So like if you are able to repurpose some of the wasted time, it sounds really negative the way I'm putting it. I hope it's not coming off negative.
It's fine.
It's fine. Okay. All right. If you're able to repurpose, so you see, there's a difference here between you could waste the same amount of time and yet use the time that's already structured well to work on the house. You wouldn't actually be changing the way things are going. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah, see that.
And so that's one of the reasons I was asking you about this wording is the repurposing, wasting time. Does that like exciting to you?
I thought I understood that, and now I don't. Repurposing the wasted time, yes, that's important to me because I waste. There are a lot of things that I don't get done besides the house project.
Right. And so if you did repurpose it, you think you would get the house project done because that seems like the top thing.
That would be probably the first thing.
Right.
But then
okay.
You see, what I think I really want is that I'd have that new habit of using my time well and being organized in myself. And I can use that then later for other purposes.
Okay. All right. So you see, we're zeroing in here. It really is about the time.
Right.
Okay. So so it sounds like that the goal you want is you want to have days have the right balance of productive time and rest time, R&R. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. And that now so this actually suggests, you see, this actually suggests ways that Susan could set goals that she could do in the next week or two that will actually be doable. So like, for example, do you know approximately how much wasted time you have in a week at this point?
No, I've never totaled it up.
Okay. So, you know, there's a really obvious like 2 week goal. I have people set, this is my rational goal setting process. I have people take whatever long range goal they have and turn it into a 2 week key result that is something they are morally certain they can do that would definitely make a difference in achieving the longer range goal. And so So you could set as a 2-week goal. This is just a suggestion. This isn't, you have to do this. You could set as a 2-week goal. Find out how much wasted time I have, right? In part by trying to fit in this house project, right? And finding out when it can fit in and when it can't, or when I think it should have been able to fit in, but it didn't, right? So what you want to do is you want to not completely change everything all at once. Like if you were to just completely change your whole schedule, you might do the exact same kind of things you are now, but just substitute the house for something that you're doing now. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
So something like trying to figure out how much, what is wasted time that you could conceivably work on this project? That would actually help you toward this. That's something that would help you toward this. Does this make sense? I feel it's a little bit abstract, so I'm wondering how it's
leading. Are you saying to try to figure out what activities I consider wasted time?
Yeah, sort of. Like to set as your 2-week goal to figure out where are the things that could change, right? Partly by experimentation, partly by monitoring. But monitoring in the context of something that you would be doing, something else that you could be doing during that time.
Just to collect information, not really to change that. I mean, I'm thinking that the next couple of weeks around Christmas, and that's chaos. I mean,
I really mean starting January 1st, because you wouldn't start something like this right now, right? Okay. Right. So I didn't mean that. I mean, once you start the launch is what I meant. So let me actually try to be clear, because I don't think this has come out clearly. So see, I'm feeling torn, because sometimes I tell people not to set self-improvement goals. And there's a reason why I sometimes say that. And this is sounding a little bit like a self-improvement goal, which can definitely become something that's difficult to track and to make obvious. And I think that's why it's not landing right, Susan. So let me try to say it one other time. Then I'm actually going to see if I can talk to Ryan, and then we'll come back to this a little bit later. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay. So what I'm thinking is, if the main issue is scheduling, have the first 2 weeks be an experiment where you're trying to schedule just as something that would be a good thing to fit into to time that you're not using well now. Trying to schedule in the house stuff into what you're doing now, where you're replacing time that you don't think is being well used with this, which would be well used. Now, this is going to take actually some thinking every single day about what are you going to normally do? Because you have certain routines that you do anyway, right? You go to the gym and do other,
right,
get dinner and things like that. So you don't want to mess that up, right? So you're going to be thinking about, well, what's the time that would be at risk for being wasted today? And what do I want to do with it today? Using just the house project. So you don't have to do a whole big prioritization thing. The thing you're going to do with the time that you want each day is going to be house stuff. And you're basically going to run an experiment to see where each day you try to figure out what that is. You try to put stuff, time into it. The next day you look and see, how did that go? Were you right? And basically collect 2 weeks of data on, is there wasted time? And what are the difficulties with repurposing it to something else? And I don't know what information you're going to get from that, but you will definitely make some progress on the, one of two things will happen. You will make some progress on the house, or maybe you make very little progress on the house. And you'll say, well, forget this scheduling stuff. I want to get the house sorted out. In which case you find out that in fact, getting the house sorted out is the top priority, right? Doing an experiment where you say, priority is, using wasted time. that really that set and that's the standard by which you test does actually help you then figure out if it turns out, no, the other one was more important. You will actually find out if you stick to that one priority for 2 weeks, you'll find out if in fact that wasn't the top priority.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's basically run an experiment that's going to get you the data you need and probably going to help you reorganize the house some. And we will be talking a little bit more about how do you make reorganizing the house fit into smaller tasks, because that's also an issue, right?
Well, that is an issue. Yeah.
That's a separate issue, which is you're going to have like 1 or 2 hour blocks and you're going to get something done in those 1 or 2 hour blocks. And that's a separate issue. But the first thing you need to do is you need to make sure on what you know the goal is, because that's going to set the standard for how you use the smaller amount of time. Good.
That's good. Give me a lot to think about.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I was a little more convoluted than I am sometimes there. Now, is Ryan here? I know he was planning to attend, but maybe.
Yes, I'm here, Jean.
Oh, there you are. Great. Would you like to tell about your issue, which also I gave a simplified version and yours is a little more complicated. You want to tell what your issue
sure.
was?
Sure. Yeah. What I wrote was, I want to get to a better place with the family business, where I am able to either grow the company and have a cooperative relationship with my brother, or get to a place where I can walk away from it without guilt or resentment.
Right. So this is, you know, there are like three different things here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's better relationship with your brother. There's actually really being efficacious at work. Like feel like you're using your entire capability, right? Did I get that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry,
I would change that second one probably to selling the business instead of really growing it, but effectively moving forward, all of us on the same page towards a sale.
Okay, so you don't actually want to be running it. One way or another, you want to be out of the business.
Yes, yeah.
That's very clarifying. I mean, I kind of knew that from having previous conversations, but I didn't follow that here. So one way or another, you want to get out of the business. But I'm also seeing that you've got a kind of over-constrained path, which is that you do that in somehow cooperatively with your brother.
Yep.
And the reason it's over-constrained is because right now you would feel guilty if you just walked away.
Yes.
Okay, great. And so this often happens. The reason, the only good way forward seems to be, well, I have to figure out how to cooperate with my brother, because, you know, that's the only good way forward. Or, you know, as you said, the other way forward is for you to somehow not have this matter to you, which is very abstract and difficult to figure out how you would get to, right?
Very much. Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask you, so this is clearer than I had realized, or to me, clearer to me, or I hadn't understood. So the real goal is you not in the business.
Yes.
Okay. So again, here we have a problem of a negative goal. This is very common, guys. You have something that you don't want. And so you come up with some ways to move forward so that you don't have what you don't want. And you get locked on those. And then you've never actually gotten clear on what you really want. And that makes it very difficult. So let's just get a little bit clear. What is it that you really want? You don't want to be in the business, but there's something else that you want here that's going on why you haven't walked away. So let's get clear on both parts of that, because there are two values.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, and I just jotted down a couple of things during the start of the call, but I think a big one is concentration. I have another project that I want to work on. And while I'm still involved with the business, it's very disruptive. And I feel like I'm unable to get concentration time on working on that. I think rejuvenation is kind of a weird one, but I seem to need a lot more rejuvenation in my life from dealing with kind of the emotional stress of being in the business and having a negative relationship with my brother. Yep. And one that's related to that would be emotional presence. I think it's hard for me to be emotionally present in other parts of my life when things at work are blowing up.
Right. Okay. So it's this huge distraction for you. And it's not just a intellectual distraction, it's an emotional distraction, an emotional disruptive force is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, very much.
And so we've got, so basically there's a quality of life goal here, right? You've got a major goal. You've got a happy family. There's you just maintaining quality life. This is something that seems to be really sapping your quality of life. Okay.
Yes.
So that's helpful, right? So we do know that that's part of the positive. Okay. So what is keeping you in the business? There's something keeping you in there and not walking away, because, you know, you mentioned that you don't want to feel guilty walking away. What is keeping you in there?
I mean, there's contractual agreements that I have that, you know, I can't make a clean break, because even if I were to quit or resign, I would still be involved with the business. They would be, you know, continuing to pay me. I would still have this relationship with my brother. So, you know, that's, as I kind of went through and rethought about my goal, that's why I kind of identified getting to a more positive place with him, where we can get alignment on goals, because I don't have a place where I can just say I walk away from it, you know, cash me out, and they have to do that, and I don't have to talk to him again.
Well, and so just to be clear, I assume you could walk away and not get cash. I just want to make sure that the options are clear. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Fair.
The issue is that there's family money tied up here, and it does matter to you to get the share of family money that is, you know, that basically that your ownership in this business represents.
Yes, it would really feel unjust to walk away and get nothing.
Okay. And so, let's name the positive value here, right? Because it would feel unjust if I walked away. Is you want to avoid injustice, but I don't think it's justice that you're really after here. Or maybe it is.
Okay. But it seems too abstract to me. So I don't know what it would be.
So is it financial security? I mean, having your share of this business. I mean, did you make decisions on the assumption that you were going to have this asset in the future? I mean, you've been involved in the family business for a while, right?
Yeah, for 25 years, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. And is it all right if I give people a little bit of context here?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Right. So Ryan's father passed away. And so the possible, you know, that made it, that shifted the dynamic in the business also, right?
Yes.
Right. So it was okay with your father if you guys sold it, right?
Yes, it was.
Something that was established before he passed away, but not everybody's on board with that. And So the thing that I'm a little bit puzzled about is I have to believe that there's also stuff about family relationships that's involved here. I mean, I assume you have not written off the brother that you're having difficulty with.
Maybe not completely, but close at times.
Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. I mean, that's upsetting. That's viscerally upsetting, right? Okay. So then let's look at this again. Is the so we've got a quality of life goal.
Yeah.
It's really clear. And there's the problem is the staying in the business sounds like it's all negative motivation. Because like even financial security is basically a negative motivation, right? And it's not like you'd like to have a better relationship with your brother per se. It's that's the only way you see that you could kind of sort out this kind of messy situation.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's, yeah.
And there are three brothers?
There's three of us.
There's three of you? So two of you are on board and the third one is not?
I'd call the other brother about a half to a quarter on board.
Okay. You feel like you could work something out with him?
I feel I could work with him. Yeah.
Okay. And it sounds to me also like, so let me just ask you point blank. If your financial security weren't at stake, what would you do?
You mean if I could walk away from the business without getting anything out of it and still be, you know, have a lot of confidence that I would be financially secure?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I would walk away. I haven't put a lot of thought into that.
So this is differentiation, yeah. Folks. If it's not obvious to you what I'm doing, we're trying to figure out what are the values and to figure out what the priorities are. And part of the way you do that when it's not clear is you use contrasting cases. And, you know, with values, the problem with values is that they are often not fully conceptualized, meaning they're not always understood in words. And the way that you figure out what the values are is by getting a concrete situation, seeing how you emotionally react to it. And so that's what I just did for Ryan there. I said, well, suppose we imagine a somewhat different situation where you really were not, you know, financially secure and you were in the same situation. And there he feels like he'd want to just walk away.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, I definitely would.
Right. And, you know, and I'll just, you know, just say something like, suppose you were really well off and you wouldn't mind if your brothers split the money. It's like, well, I've got enough money, so it's fine if they split the money. I love my brothers too, right? I mean, that's the kind of thing that you might think in that situation. I don't need the money, so it's no problem. So it's partly the, you know, really wanting the flexibility for your own life that creates part of the, that creates. So it's really a flexibility that you, I think you want, that that's a more positive thing. You see what I'm saying?
I think so.
Yeah. Of getting the money out gives you a flexibility for your life, which I think would be, this is just knowing a few other details here.
Okay.
Am I getting close to what the value is?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense to me, that getting the money out of the company would give me a lot of flexibility in what I do with the rest of my life. Yes.
Right. Because you could certainly support yourself some other way, right?
Yeah.
You have no doubt about that, right?
I could get a job.
Get a job, you know, whatever. But the thing you'd like to do would be much easier with some financial flexibility. Right. Okay.
Definitely. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So this is now... We now have values compared to values. This is part of how you figure out what the top priority is. You need to actually be able to see everything in terms of value so you can decide which is the biggest value in this context. And we've got it down to flexibility and quality of life. And of course you want both. Let's stipulate, of course you want both. But in this context, which do you think is most urgent for you?
I think quality of life is most urgent.
Okay. So that's interesting because that suggests that a shorter term goal on that basis might be figuring out how to make uproar at the office not be uproar in the rest of your life.
Right.
And that's something that's under your control as opposed to getting your brother to cooperate with you. Right?
Yes, definitely.
So that you could actually, you know, you could actually set a short-term goal as, you know, measuring your recovery from when things show up and reducing that recovery by using various tactics or, you know, preemptively getting yourself in state so that before you have a conversation with the brothers, you are emotionally inoculated. We have tools for this kind of thing in the thinking, guys. This is not just hot air. There's actually tools that Ryan knows something about that are not, you know, this does not like sound completely crazy to you. Is that right, Ryan?
Yeah, absolutely. So right. Would part of this also be trying to like identify a way to engage with him that doesn't still respect my values, but doesn't, I don't know what the right words are for it, but doesn't cause such, you know, uproar and drama.
Well, definitely. So that's part of the thing of like, if your goal is, okay, inoculate yourself so that you maintain your quality of life outside of work. Like, for example, one of the things we're just finalizing a date for, we're going to try to get enough people to sign up for a Rationally Connected Conversations intensive. It looks like it's going to be the last weekend in April. And, you know, that's something where there's a skill set that can actually help. And it can help beforehand because you can imagine the conversation and figure out how to use the tools to do it. And it can help afterwards because you can revisit if one didn't go well, figure out how you wish it went well. And like one of the things that I learned from, this is the Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication. One of the things I learned from Rosenberg is that it can be very helpful to do a do-over just in your own mind to just realize, oh, I could have done something differently. And suddenly, instead of having felt like a complete victim of circumstances, you realize, oh, hey, there's something I might be able to do something next time differently. And you have this feel, you have this sense of efficacy and possibility that is very encouraging and completely changes your attitude toward the next conversation. So that's an example of something that could help inoculate you. But even just plain thinking on paper, what are we going to be talking about today? What is he going to raise? How is he going to tick me off? Why am I going to react that way? Well, what could I do in advance to try to make that be easier? Mm-hmm. Just even just straight logic applied to the problem, but proactively could absolutely make a difference. And then the other thing is when you find that you can't recover and go work on the other project, right? Or that you are upset and so you don't enjoy, say, your family time as much as you would like.
Yeah.
Getting really high aware on that. Gee, you know, here's the family time. And I really want it to be higher quality of life. You know, you might actually be able to have a really frank conversation with your wife at that moment and say, oh my God, I'm still like over the top here. And I really want to try to come here and be present with the family. And I don't know what to do. And she might give you some sympathy or some empathy right in that moment. That would help you. You know, there's one of the things that helps in relationships is openness, right? Being vulnerable, not having to have it all together and just being able to be present with where you are, even though where you are right now is not where you want to be.
Yeah.
And to be able to be okay. Yeah, this is where I am right now. God, my head is all over the place. And be able to be recognize that and like warn people about that. And typically, when the people you're warning about this are people who love you, they react reasonably positively and supportively. And often they can, you know, their support can sometimes help really shift that very quickly. So you see, by getting to the thing that Ryan really wants, we now have some constructive ideas about how he could move forward to that and how he could maybe make a real difference in a short-term period that he could observe, because this is what the goal is. You want to take major goals and you want to bring them down to something that you think you could do within 2 weeks that would be an observable result that would really get you the payoff. I mean, not the whole payoff, right? I mean, improving his quality of life is going to be an ongoing thing. Or for Susan, both the house project and the getting better at scheduling, these are going to be ongoing things. But you want to actually say, I have objectively gotten moved forward toward this goal and I'm getting some of the payoff here. So like, for example, if you were able to improve the quality of life a little bit, that would actually, you would actually be more flexible, right?
Right.
Right. You Definitely. Have the yeah. flexibility you wanted. And so these two things are not, these two things have now been made compatible by understanding what the essential is.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That's really helpful. I mean, I had such a hard time thinking about how to do this without being dependent on his actions, right? Which I don't have any control over. And just leading to feeling stuck and kind of having just, I mean, it was hard to just, you know, vocalize this goal in a way that wasn't just about how I feel about it.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. And this is a known problem, right? This is not something about you, Ryan. This is the nature of really complex goals, is that they first of all, the causality, actually, I have a few other things on this I want to say. So let me pause and you acknowledge that. Let me make my other points. And then I think we'll see that basically everything Ryan just said was part of what I was planning to say here. So let's just carry in there. Okay. Okay. So I think that the problem of finishing is really clear with these two real examples. These are complex goals with a lot of moving parts. And of course you want everything at once. Of course you want everything at once. But that leads you to get buried in the weeds and trying to figure out how to get everything at once, which just blows your mind, right? It really tends to overwhelm you. And this is then the problem. If it's something that's very well understood, and you know the steps to take, if the schedule slips at all, you run into trouble. So the solution here is you need to figure out what the abstract value, what is the really big value? This is my process for rational goal setting. You've got to figure out what is the actual most meaningful aspect of this. And then you need to ensure that you get meaningful results that absolutely lead you in that direction. And that's how you can actually do something like this in the short term. Let me give a couple of examples where you could do it on a deadline where I think it's really clear. And then I'll talk about how you do it for these more complex cases. So and how knowing the real meaningful value there is important. Like take something simple, like I said, doing the dishes. Take doing the dishes. Now, ideally, doing the dishes means every single dirty dish in the kitchen and dining room gets either into the dishwasher and running or hand washed and dried and put away, right? I mean, that's, if you wanted to have like the perfection of doing the dishes, that's what it would be. You can't always do that in, like, suppose you have 15 minutes, right? The way that you would make sure that you got the dishes finished in 15 minutes is you would need to know what the payoff for you of doing the dishes is. So for example, for me, the big payoff of doing the dishes is that the counters and the tables get clean. That's what matters to me. That's why I go and do the dishes right after dinner. I like my tables and my counters to be clean. Now, this means that I do need to get all the dishes off the tables and counters, but it doesn't matter if a few are left in the sink. Like sometimes I don't finish the hand wash. I throw all the stuff that can go in the dishwasher, and I leave the pots and pans in the sink because they take more time. And I've got what I want. The counters and the tables are clean. I have finished in the sense, even though there's more that you could do, but I've really reached a stopping point that is completely meaningful to me. It's why I was doing the dishes. And I don't mind coming back some other time when I have a different purpose to quote unquote, finish off the task. But I'm not wedded to the task that has every little bell and whistle done because I know what's meaningful to me. Now, on the other hand, there are other times when I'm cooking and I said, oh my God, I got to do the dishes. And the reason I say that is I need to use the sink for cooking. And if you have dirty dishes in the sink, like if you pour, you know, pasta, I mean, various things, you sometimes need a clean, empty sink when you're cooking. Now, when I'm doing this, I have a different set of priorities, right? Here I'm going to actually leave a few things on the counter. I still put stuff in the dishwasher because that gets it out of the sink and clears up and gives me more working space. But I don't mind if a little bit is left on the counter. My mother used to make a point of running the dishwasher. She was very cost conscious. And she knew exactly when the cost of electricity went down. And she would always run the dishwasher at night after the cost of electricity went down. And so she made a point of running that dishwasher. And she was doing the dishes to get the cheap electricity before she went to bed. And so she would fill it up. And if there were some extra dishes, she wouldn't mind. They'd be left in the sink because she had filled the dishwasher and she was getting her goal. So it's knowing what matters to you sets the standard for what finishing is. Finishing is not some intrinsic thing where you do everything that you could do. This is another example of needing to be objective. Now, here's another example. I just came up this, I used to be very active in Toastmasters And one of the things you do in Toastmasters is you evaluate other people's speeches. And you have 3 minutes, so there's a definite deadline for it, right? Well, suppose your goal is to educate the listeners, which is typically what my goal was in doing an evaluation, educate the listeners on what makes a good speech. You know, you could actually tell one good point and one bad point and not actually be finished. You could run out of time. But if you said one good point and why it's good, you have now educated the listeners. Or if you say one bad point and an alternative of how to do it better, you've now educated the listeners on how to give a good speech. Now, you could have a completely different goal. Like if your goal is to encourage them to come back, which is a big part of Toastmasters, is people, you know, what you need public speaking, you need to actually get up there and give speeches. That's, you got to face the fears, try to present something, babble something out and find out, gee, that preparation wasn't enough. I got to try again. And actually doing that in front of a sympathetic audience, that's what Toastmasters provides. So a valid goal for an evaluator might be to encourage the speaker so they'll come back and try again, in which case they might just say what was good and the impact it had on them. And they wouldn't give any advice and they would not achieve my goal, which is to educate the listeners, but they might achieve the goal of encouraging the speaker. And in either case, that could, either of those things could be done in 3 minutes or 3 hours. But if you know the goal, then you know when to stop and you know what can be cut and what needs to be put in. So I really think that the sticking point to finishing sooner rather than later is a preconception of how you're supposed to finish, about how you achieve the goal and what finishing looks like. And if your vision is at all complex, it achieves multiple goals at once. And you cannot streamline that until you get clear on what the primary goal is. You need to figure out the main value and then figure out how to get that value in the short term. That's what makes a huge difference. And the reason that you need this is that's what enables the creativity to come up with multiple paths towards the goal. Now, the way that I explain this is, you know, if you have an abstract long-range goal, then you need to figure out, you need to bring that in. Sometimes you just divide by two. If it's a 10-year goal, then what's the 5-year goal? What's the 2.5-year goal? What's the year and a quarter goal? And then eventually you get it down to something that's 1 month to a year. That's a little bit easier. And from there, you go down to, well, what's my 2-week goal? 2 weeks is a critical amount of time because you can figure out realistically what you can get done in 2 weeks. You cannot really predict how much time something that's going to be take more than that it's going to predict. But you can make a reasonable prediction of how much effort you can put in and how much result you're going to get in 2 weeks. Because you can see that far. You know what's on your calendar and you have a sense of how much time you have and you have at least some sense of what you can get done in that time. And it's a short enough experiment that if you're completely wrong, you can find that out. And the creative problem is to figure out what is a short-term goal, a short-term 2-week goal that could actually get that long-term, you know, some aspect of that long-term impact and be meaningful given what matters to you. And this is really what just-in-time planning is about. You know, I've talked about rational goal setting. That's really how you figure out your motivation. What is the number one thing and get the direction right and do it. But if you really need to get creative to figure out how to break it into a smaller thing, that is a process I call just-in-time planning. The main thing you do there is you think about how to evolve into the long-range goal. So like, for example, on a book or a painting, right? You have an idea. Let's take painting first. You have an idea of the scene that you want to paint. You need to get a scaled down version of that. The typical thing you do is a sketch. And then you layer on the basic colors of paint. And then you layer on the shape. Basically, you add three dimensionality and more color onto it. And then, you know, on the last pass, it's just highlights and things that you're putting on. You do it in a series of passes where you've actually broken it down to something that you can think about. And the key there is always have a goal that you can achieve in the next 2 weeks that you can see is materially moving you to the long-range painting, even if the painting is going to take 3 or 4 months. Same thing with a book. You need to break it down into things that you can do in 2 weeks. Like typically, if you actually are ready to write a book, you should be able to get a generalized outline done in 2 weeks because you already know the topic. If it's not that, you may actually have a research goal of figuring out what it is you're going to do. But that's something you can do. Now, the actual thing you might do in 1 2-hour task, like the thing I do, my first thing I do whenever I have a writing assignment is I figure out what's my selfish purpose in writing this. And that's something that I can always do in less than 2 hours, right? That is a thought. If you don't have a selfish purpose in doing the writing assignment, it doesn't matter if it's an essay or a book. You need to have a selfish purpose before you start. If you don't have a selfish purpose, you're not going to get anywhere, right? So breaking it down into something, but getting clear on what that is going to move you materially further to figuring out exactly what you want to say in it and exactly how to say it. So what we've been doing here with Ryan and Susan is coaching them through the process. I'm not like explaining the processes, we're going just a little bit on the side. And this is what I do in launch. In launch, I coach people both in figuring out what the short-term goals are and then helping them motivate to actually do the work. That's actually in the class, Do What Matters Most, which is also available as a standalone. And it's part of the launch is I have them go through that. But you can also learn how to do this yourself. And I think that gets us to a quick ad for the two classes that are coming up. So if you want to know how to do this creative process of figuring out how to take your big complex goal and turn it into things that are shorter term, that it can evolve so that in fact, like I like to think about it is that if you're always finishing, if you need to, at a certain point, you always can leave that project. Like for example, Susan's project. She's going to break it down to various parts of her house, or my mother, the barn. Once she finished the barn, there was a couple years where she wasn't trying to reduce the rest of the stuff. She was at a stopping point. And then she decided to get started again. And she went through the attic and she got through that stopping point. At various times, you get to stopping points where you don't have to keep going because you're at a stable finishing point. And that's what you really need for major long-term goals, because typically things are going to come up. Christmas is coming, right? Christmas is next week. Everything stops for a week or 10 days at Christmas time. So it's important to be able to bring big projects to a stable conclusion so that you can then pick up on, you know, when you can get back to them after that goes. So if you're really interested in learning that process, that's what the just-in-time planning class is. You'll be getting an email with a link to that. You can read about that there. If what you're really more focused on is getting your major goal done, I recommend you join the launch, which starts January 1st. It runs for 8 weeks. You can read about that too. And it includes the just-in-time planning as a bonus. Basically, I don't recommend you take just-in-time planning unless you have a big, hairy goal that you need to figure out how to plan, in which case it's the perfect class and the perfect time to do it in person. If it doesn't seem like a big, hairy goal, it's not an appropriate class to take. But any major goal, like, for example, find a new job. We've had some people come into launch to find a new job, which in theory is straightforward, right? You need to circulate your resume and talk to your network and find out what's available. But to actually go and do that, it turns out that you need a systematic process. The steps are clear. There it's you need actually the motivation and the organization, and you can get that coaching in launch. But if the project, like how do I even do this, is unclear, then you need just-in-time planning. Or you can just come into the launch and get coached on it by me. So in a minute, I'm going to stop for questions, but I want to just give the kind of concluding concluding point here. You know, I said how in the description, I said why this is so important for your happiness. You know, happiness is a state of consciousness that proceeds from the achievement of your values. When you understand how to actually finish, right? Actually reach finishing points on a regular basis. That means that you actually achieve your values on a regular basis. And if you have chosen those as being the most important, most meaningful things, it means that you will not just be satisfied that you've been doing some things. You'll be at a very high state of joy because the most important things, the things that are most meaningful to you, you will be achieving on a regular basis. So I actually think this process of how to finish sooner rather than later is one of the practical skills that really supports a happy life. And I hope you've gotten some ideas about how to apply it in your life. And of course, I've got lots more material on this available at Popular Prices if you would like to get some more. So thank you all for coming. And why don't we, I'll stay on. We are officially on till 15:15 for questions, but I'm also happy to coach people. If you have a major goal and you want to talk about it, if you have for launchers or non-launchers or people who might want to be in launch, feel free, ask questions, get coaching. Thanks for coming. So who would like to go first? Who has a question or help they'd like? Roger.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks.
Good. So my question is about how do you assess skill development sort of in the context of this goal achievement protocol that mm-hmm. you're talking about. Well, I can get more specific, but
yeah, what give me the specific goal that you want to, or specific skill that you want to develop.
There are three particular skills that I see as the sort of concretes which translate to the bigger picture mid-range goal. And those skills are drafting in an engineering context, mm-hmm. math in an academic context, and the other one's a hobby, but you know, practicing music and stuff. But so
what's the major goal, Roger?
The major goal is to create a synergistic relationship between work and school. I could expand on that, but
okay. So I'm not sure what your actual question was, but I want to give you a little pushback on that as the goal.
Sure.
Because you're basically assuming, you haven't actually named the thing you want. You know, synergistic relationship between work and school. Is that what you said?
I could be, yeah, I want a part-time job.
Hold on. That is, you've already decided this is the way to get something that's more important to you. You haven't named the thing that's more important to you, and you're kind of locked into these two things have to be synergistic. Do you see what I'm saying there?
Sorta.
It's right.
Well, could I ask a follow up?
Yes.
Just to be clear. So, in my mind, the short term and long term goal, which kind of serves two different functions, is to get really good at math. So, because I see that as partially a means to an end, it's a way of making a viable income, but it's also like a spiritual thing, like long-term one that's just a central purpose in life. So
get really good at math is not your central purpose. What's your central purpose?
Concretize math in a professional setting. Or make epistemological developments in STEM.
Okay. So like what my husband is doing in the philosophy of math. Is yeah. that right? Okay.
But I could, yeah, expand on that, sure. But yeah, and I want to, yeah.
Okay. So just, I've had a few conversations with Roger before. So I mean, that's wonderful if that's, but my understanding is you don't know that much about math, right? Right. That you're learning math right now, right? You're not an expert in math.
I just, well, okay. So
where are you in learning math? Like
I've gotten mixed signals about that.
What's the most advanced course in math you've gotten an A in? For me, it's differential equations. Okay.
Calculus.
So basic calculus. Okay. But next is differential equations, and then next is functions of a complex variable, and you know, then I haven't gone beyond functions of a complex variable, right?
Okay.
Right. So the reason I ask this is, I mean, do you know enough about math to even understand that central purpose? That's what's concerning me.
I think so. And it's hard to validate that based on my conversation with Harry, which was very enjoyable and productive. I think I do. And I also, based on feedback I've gotten from professors, I think I do. But there's a gap between some of the skills attributable to math, you know, like what do you have automatized already and that kind of stuff, versus kind of having a sketch that's pretty deep in scope, although kind of ambitious. So that's why.
Okay. Let me give you an example, which I think may be analogous to yours, and you can see if it applies to you. Because I think I'm definitely not feeling solid that I understand where you are and what you're working on. So I'm just going to give you an analogy and then try with the next person. So like, for example, I think this is a pretty good example. I'm working on a book. I'm always working on a book, but I finally realized that the thing that's held me back is that just the material was just a little bit floating. Like all the psychological concepts, I'm pretty sure I know what they are and how they fit together, but to explain them, it was difficult. Every single time I tried to explain something, it was just a little too difficult. And I said, okay, I need to systematically define all of these terms. And that's what I've been doing the last, this happened a few weeks ago. And so like yesterday I defined pain, and not defined exactly because it's an axiomatic concept, but the day before that, need, like there are all these psychological terms that seem like completely obvious, but I'm now like pinning them down and I've got them defined. And I did that because of a generalized idea. Yeah, you know, I think this floats. And the kind of thing that helps that is to systematically go through and define every single term. And I know the method of definition. I teach that in the thinking lab. I learned that from Harry Binswanger. So I just gave myself an assignment. Okay. I'm going to find every single term that I think floats a little bit. I'm going to define it by using this process that I know. And so, you know, you could do something like that. Like if you think that certain mathematic things are not the problem, and this is real, right? If you get to a higher level, like if you're trying to do calculus and you do not have algebra automatized, you are doomed. You are completely doomed because the calculus courses assume that you can do algebra, you know, in your sleep. And so if you recognize something like that, you can go back in the hierarchy and say, okay, this summer, I'm going to work 1,000 algebra exercises, right? You could just do that. I mean, I actually did this when I was tutoring kids. When I was first started my business and I needed to make some money, I put out a shingle tutoring kids in my building in New York. And I had these two kids. And at the end of the year, I said, you know, I think the reason Juan Carlos is having trouble with math is I don't think his teachers made him memorize the one digit math facts. You know, 1 + 1 = 2, 9 + 9 = 18, 2 × 3 = 6. He didn't have the single digit math facts memorized. And so his mother and I talked about it. And that summer, he did a page of addition, single digit facts, a page of subtraction, a page of multiplication, single digit multiplication, and a page of single digit division every day for the summer. And from then on, he was at the top of his math class. So you can like intellectually conclude something like this. And then go to the base in the hierarchy and say, okay, I'm going to automatize this. And you just give yourself an assignment and go through and, okay, this is time on task on this particular thing. And maybe that's what you're talking about, Roger. And that is certainly true. Skills are, understanding how skills build on each other is very important. And making sure you automatize the basic skill can make a huge difference. So is that somewhat helpful?
I'm not sure. I have to chew it over.
Okay.
Thank you for your feedback.
Great. Lisa, how can I help you?
Hello there. Hi. So I just wanted to ask, I looked at the 8-week program and I see a lot of it is, you know, walking away and kind of doing some journaling exercises most of the time. It looks like there's going to be 2 opportunities of Zoom sessions.
Each week.
Each week,
there are 2 coaching calls. Right. Okay. And it starts with a major coaching day called Thinking Day. And it actually ends with a major coaching day called Thinking Day.
Yeah. Okay. And so for us working folks, are there 2 different time sessions, like in the afternoon and then 1 in the evening? Or how is that going to work? Just trying to figure out how I can fit this into my schedule.
Yes. So there are the coaching sessions are at Eastern time, either noon, 3 p.m. or 8 p.m. Eastern. And they alternate. So any given week, there'll be 2 out of 3 of those. And it's, you know, it is, we do have people in Europe and they can't come to the 8 p.m. ones. And we've had people in Australia who could only come to the 8 p.m. ones. So there is somewhat of an issue with that. You can also send in issues by email. And for people who are really, you know, that basically the group coaching does not work for them. There's also the possibility of getting private coaching to that's an additional cost, but you could do that. But you can also do a lot by, you can send in written questions and get feedback by email. And people also get a lot of benefit from hearing what the other people are up to. One of the things about launch is if you set this 8-week period where you're going to try to achieve a major goal, the thought work that happens every day, you know, I send it to you guys. Everybody gets the same thought work. And one of the reasons this works is there's a very predictable series of issues. Like the first week, it's like figuring out when you're going to do this. And everybody is trying to do that. Like you set this new goal at the beginning of the year and you're already busy 24/7. Right. So it's every single person has an issue with that. And so, you know, different aspects of the problem come up in the coaching call, but everybody says, oh, that was helpful. I had that problem too. You know, the second week or the third week, you're actually starting to do it regularly. And now you're finding that it's actually messing up something else that you hadn't expected. Right. Because you've pushed something else out. And so how do you deal with that? And you know, I'm not saying that everybody is lockstep, but there is a definite pattern of order in how this happens. And then one of the things I have everybody do is, although it's achieve a major goal in 8 weeks, I have everybody set a 4-week goal. And one of the reasons for that is that people tend to be wildly optimistic about what they can get done in 8 weeks. And we can make sure it's a more realistic goal for 4 weeks. And then a 2-week thing, you're absolutely sure you can get. And then if the schedule slips, you still get something really important done during the 8 weeks, which matters, actually. Actually, getting success really does matter. And so as we're approaching the 4-week point, every single person starts feeling pressure. And so all of the thought work is about, well, what do you do with pressure? So it is an issue. I do recommend to try to get to at least 1 coaching session a week, if you possibly can. And, you know, sometimes people can do it at lunch. It depends what time zone you're in also, whether you can accommodate it. But there is usually for most people in most time zones, there's at least 1 that is not like obviously in the center of work.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
Yes. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah.
Doug, how can I help you?
Hi. Thank you for the discussion. I very much appreciate it. My question is, when you're doing your course on goal setting and so on, do you distinguish between different kinds of discipline? And what I mean by that is, let's take, earlier you gave some examples for mathematics. And if you want to go about pursuing mathematics, you sort of have a road to follow. You take mm-hmm. courses and you have signposts where they post, hey, you got a great grade here, or nope, you didn't do that so well, and so on. How do you distinguish between that kind of discipline and like what I'm doing, which is low budget filmmaking, mm-hmm. where there are no guideposts, there are no, you know, there is no path set out for you to follow, you don't get grades, and so on. Yeah. Is my question clear?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that even in like mathematics, in any field, it depending on how common the first part of the path is, there can be a well set goal, like go get a PhD in mathematics. It's pretty well understood what you need to do. Certainly to get an undergraduate degree, it's well understood what to do for that. But then once you have a PhD, then you have the problem, well, what are you going to do now? And it's the exact same problem you have. Now, you probably did take some courses on like, what are the basics of how you put together a film and put together a story, right? And then and at this point, it's your creativity. And part of your creativity, partly it's you actually being clear on your selfish goals, which are typically amorphous and not fully conceptualized. And it's partly on you making sure you don't get in your own way to shut down your creativity, like get stuck. The only way I can make this film is such and such. And that turns out to be difficult. And then you're like stuck. You need to be able to see alternate ways. So I deal mostly with that amorphous kind. The amorphous kind when you're not completely, you need to actually make explicit what you're trying to do. And you typically, you need to actually take some steps to make it more real and to get an objective result. This is another way that you use just-in-time planning is, and you do it with film, right? You probably do, like, do you do like a storyboards for your film before you do it?
It depends, okay. right now, I and my associate are working on an animated sci-fi action adventure. And literally we go from script to animation. So you could call the animation storyboards in a sense, but they're actually the finished product.
Okay. And maybe that's work. If that's working for you, I'm not criticizing, right?
Okay.
But you did start with a script and you probably did drafts of the script and you probably had an outline or just at least a basic plot sequence before you did the script. Is that right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So this Always. In creative work, there typically is an outlining, drafting, revising process. And and often what you need to do, because you actually, after you see the first draft, you say, oh my God, that isn't quite what I intended. And you actually need the draft to be able to see that, right? And it becomes very important in creative work to get a version done sooner rather than later so you can see how it all hangs together. Because it's hard to hold it all together in your head. And that's why an outline is so helpful for writing and a first draft is so helpful. And you can have major, you know, in Ayn Rand recommends three passes for editing. Edit for structure, edit for clarity, then edit for impact. And it's only after you have the first draft you find out, oh, I thought I had the structure. I had an outline that was supposed to do the structure, but now I see the structure wasn't quite what I wanted. You actually need to see the total. There are a lot of things like that where you actually need an in-between finishing point to be able to see the total. So I think that's very important for creative work. That's really why I developed just-in-time planning, was for creative work. So is that...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but will you, since we've participated in this, will you be sending us a link for the, you know, how we sign up for the just-in-time planning, et cetera?
Yes, there's an automated one that I think goes out in 4 minutes or something like that. And then you'll also get the, there'll be a message that says the recording is available. That will also have the link to just-in-time planning. And it's also on the, if you just go to thinkingdirections.com, it should be on that main page there.
Okay.
Okay, great. Now, someone in the chat said, just-in-time planning occurs during major family time. Would it be worthwhile to just view the recording? And so what I would say to that is, yes, I mean, there has been a just-in-time planning class in the Thinking Lab. I did it first in 2012, and a lot of people have gotten benefit from that. So I definitely think the recording is worth it. And I want to clarify for Thinking Labbers on the call, you need to, Thinking Labbers are going to have access to this recording after it's recorded. So if for Thinking Labbers, if you don't need to attend live or you can't attend live, you should just be in the Thinking Lab and get the recording. You do not need to sign up for it. If you're not in the Thinking Lab, and you want to attend live, you need to pay for it and you'll get 3 months in the Thinking Lab. If you're not in the Thinking Lab and you can't attend live, just join the Thinking Lab. It's a 3 month minimum and you'll have access to it on January 2nd or something like that. You'll have access to it. So I'm not trying to, it's a little complicated because I only want people to sign up for it if they actually have a goal and are going to come to both days, because it will only really work if everybody is working their problems. We're going to stop and work the problems every 10 or 15 minutes. And everybody needs to actually have a major goal they're working on. And that's why it's set up this way. But I'm not trying to trick anyone into paying more if they can't attend live. So I hope that's clear. Enric, you had a question or comment?
Yeah. I don't know if it pertains to this discussion, but I had a perspective about abstract goal or purpose to goals. And I wanted to see if you wanted to go over my perspective or whether it's appropriate in another discussion.
I'll listen to it. That's great.
Okay. So I have an abstract goal, abstract purpose, which is to have, when I was a kid, there was this positive sense in popular culture of science and going to the moon and comic books that were heroic. But my goals are not...
Yeah. But I haven't heard a purpose yet. I've heard something that you value. You value kind of heroic popular culture stuff.
Oh, but that isn't the purpose.
It's not a purpose unless you're specifically saying I'm going to do something with that.
Well, I have specific multiple things. I have, because I see achieving that as if I create a comic book, but then I work in technology, that I also, it's like things that inform each other. Like I might spend some time doing a comic book, but then I need to get more knowledge about something else. So I might put that on hold and set a goal for learning about a certain technology that will be used. So I'm clear about it and put that on hold. So it seems like there's multiple goals to achieving the more abstract value, I guess.
Well, so I agree that, you know, heroic popular culture is a value of yours, but is your goal to
to make it something in the culture?
Bring heroic art or mm-hmm. cultural things to create new ones, basically. Is it to create new ones or bring stuff back? That's not quite
to create new ones.
Yeah, so it's an artistic
goal. The past ones, but there would be new ones, yes.
Right. Okay. So, and I would, you know, zero that in because you are, what is the term you like to use? I know some people like to call them illustrated graphic novels,
or comic books or
comics, or what would you call what you're doing?
Either comic books or graphic novels is fine. And it's also...
I froze.
I still see you. You're fine with me.
Okay, good.
Am I frozen? Okay.
Okay. I think my link is not that good. So tell me again what... So your goal is to actually create some of this literature, basically, right?
Yes. Well, that's among them, yes.
Okay. Well, so what I would say, Enric, is you need to actually formulate the bigger goal. Maybe this kind of literature is a means to that end, but I haven't heard what the bigger goal is. And that, I think, needs to be clear. Okay? It needs to be formulated in terms of something that you are acting to gain and keep, that is, you know, got some kind of, that's made objective.
Well, what I really want is inspire a community that does that, so that there's not just me.
So, okay. So now this is important, because this is more of a communication goal than a creation goal. Because you can inspire a community without actually creating yourself, right? So this is the kind of thing that's, you know, if you're fuzzy on the long range goal, you can wind up doing a lot of different things and not having them add up. So getting really clear in the long range goal is very beneficial. You got a general direction, Enric, but I think you'd definitely benefit by pinning down which of these is the thing you're really trying to do, create yourself or communicate.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, and something that's important to say, this is a common thing that happens when you get an idea for a central purpose. It turns out your idea is a little bit vague and you didn't think it was vague. You thought it was perfectly clear and you start doing stuff. And then it seems like you know, exactly what Enric said, which is, well, you put that down and you go do this. And typically what happens is at a certain point, you start getting frustrated that it's not moving forward far enough. And that's when you realize, oh, I probably need the goal to be a little bit more pointy, is the way I think about it, a little bit more directed to make sure that it's helping me not go off on side things to actually move this forward. And that happened to me in my career for sure. Good.
All yeah, right. Very good. Thanks.
Great. Now, there were a couple other questions here. Carl, I won't say who it was. Sorry. I hope that. Someone asks, it's not clear how much of launch is asynchronous. When do live sessions meet? So they meet on Mondays and Thursdays at either noon, 3 or 8 p.m. And it alternates which one. Is it all individual exercises? It is essentially individual exercises. So you do daily thought work, which you do by yourself. And you do your define initiative, which you do by yourself, and come in on thinking day and talk with me about it. Send it to me and talk with me about it. There is not really any group work, except that the people who've been in launch pretty much unanimously will tell you that the coaching calls are incredibly inspiring, because every single person on the coaching call has this major goal that they're trying to achieve and they're wrestling with it and getting advice on it. And you see that they move forward and it's inspiring it's very inspiring. So the group effort is the coaching calls. The group coaching is helpful because other people have the same problem, and it's very inspiring to see other people working on it. There were a couple other clarifications. The launch coaching sessions are only available to people who are actually enrolled in launch. The Thinking Lab class recordings are available to everyone in the Thinking Lab. Okay. And any other questions or comments, or does anyone want any other coaching? Because I think we may have reached a natural conclusion here. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it. I think this is an important topic, and I enjoyed putting it into an hour session to try to motivate people for the importance of finishing sooner rather than later. So with that, I'll draw a line. Everybody, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever you celebrate. And you will get a link to the recording as soon as it's available. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you.